Committee, the Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Rose, please call the roll.
Chair McLean.
Here.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Here.
Majority Whip Lamarca, excused. Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Burfield.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Casello.
Present.
Daly.
Here.
Duggan.
Here.
Escamani.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fernandez Barquin.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Rayner Goolsbee.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Robinson W.
Here.
Roth. Saroy.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Tant, excused. Valdez.
Present.
Ex officio Castle.
Here.
The quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. I'd like to remind everyone on the here and also out in the and any visitors to silence your electronic devices, please. Members, welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. I look forward to working with each of you during the interim and on into the regular legislative session. We will do a more traditional introductory meeting in January when we can introduce ourselves and get an overview of the committee's general jurisdiction. Today's meeting, however, will be focused on hearing House Bill 3A, which contains disaster relief measures focused on Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. I would like to take a minute, though, to introduce my Vice Chair, Representative Buchanan, and our Republican Committee Whip, Representative Lamarca. Unfortunately, he's not with us today. He had some travel snafu that happened, and but he'll be joining us certainly and when we get back. We do not have no one's been officially named as the Democratic ranking member at this time, and so when that happens, we'll introduce them in January. With that, I'm going to move directly to the consideration of House Bill 3A. As I will be presenting the bill, I will now turn the gavel over to my Vice Chair, Vice Chair Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One heck of a promotion for the first day, so thank you for that. Members, we're going to move forward with the first and only bill scheduled for today. We're going to move forward with House Bill 3A, Disaster Relief, by Representative McLean. Representative McLean, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Members, as we all know, Florida was impacted by two hurricanes this fall that caused widespread damage and destruction. House Bill 3A contains a number of disaster relief elements with a focus on relief for damage caused by Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. And members, I have it's a fairly long script, and I'd hope to detail as much as possible to cut down on maybe to answer questions before you need to ask them. So if you'll bear with me. First, as you may recall, last year's tax package bill contained a provision that would provide property tax relief for residential properties that are rendered uninhabitable for more than 30 days as a result of a catastrophic event. The property taxes for the year would be proportionally reduced based upon the portion of the year that the property was uninhabitable. So the first provision in HB 3A essentially provides this type of relief for residential properties that were rendered uninhabitable for more than 30 days as a result of Hurricane Ian or Nicole. The bill also extends certain property tax deadlines and discounts for owners of property destroyed or rendered uninhabitable due to Hurricane Ian or Nicole, to allow all affected property owners to delay their payments for 60 days without penalty. Another provision of the bill relates to FEMA public assistance grants to local governments. The bill authorizes the Division of Emergency Management to pay, on behalf of eligible local governments, the required one-half local match needed to secure funding from FEMA. Local governments must agree to spend an equal amount of funds on further disaster recovery or mitigation activities. Grants are allocated on a first-come, first-served basis, and we are appropriating $350 million to DEM to pay these local match requirements, and the funds are available for 5 years. The bill provides $150 million to the Florida Housing Finance Corporation for affordable housing hurricane recovery efforts. $60 million of the $150 million must be used to assist persons with the repair or replacement of housing, relocation costs, eviction prevention, limited time rental assistance, and other recovery purposes. From these funds, from the $60 million, $25 million of the $60 may be used to help homeowners to pay for insurance deductibles. $90 million must be used to fund the Rental Recovery Loan Program. This program was created in 2006 to provide affordable rental housing units needed to promote the housing recovery needs of local communities following a disaster. The bill provides $100 million to the Department of Environmental Protection to supplement the existing beach management and erosion control program for beaches impacted by Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. And then the bill also creates two new programs. The first, the Hurricane Restoration Reimbursement Grant Program, is created to provide grants to certain homeowners, cooperatives, and condominium associations to mitigate for coastal beach erosion caused by Hurricanes Ian and Nicole, with priority given to low-income or moderate-income persons. Cost sharing by the owner is required, with the state providing $1 for each dollar provided by the owner, with a maximum of $150,000 in state funding toward the actual cost of an eligible project. Grants are allocated first-come, first-served basis, and for that, that allocation is $50 million appropriated to DEP for that program. Second, the Hurricane Stormwater and Wastewater Assistance Grant Program to provide financial assistance to eligible local governments. Grants will be capped at $10 million per project and must be awarded by May 1st of 2023. For fiscal year 2023, $100 million is appropriated to DEP for the program. Finally, the bill creates the Florida Emergency Management Assistance Foundation to provide assistance, funding, and support to the division in its disaster response, recovery, and relief efforts for natural emergencies. The foundation is governed by a 5-member board of directors. The director of the division will appoint the members, and a majority of the members must have knowledge about emergency management activities and programs. The foundation will operate under a contract with DEM. The foundation is repealed December 31st, 2024, unless reviewed and saved from repeal by the legislature. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative McClain. Members, we're going to now move into questions. Are there questions on the bill? Representative Escamani with a question.
Thank you so much, Chair, and welcome, everyone. It's great to be back in Ways and Means, and welcome to our new members. We're going to have fun this year. So I just want to first, Chair McClain, go to on the staff analysis on page 9 in footnote 65, I kind of notice that it does note that unlike previous post-hurricane relief packages, this one does not include foreclosure eviction prevention. And I'm just curious why are we not including foreclosure eviction protection and diversion as it relates to disasters?
Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was not one of the things that we contemplated when the bill was being drafted.
Rep. Escamani with a follow-up.
Thank you so much, Chair. I appreciate that. Thank you for that answer. Is that something that you think would be, you know, considering to add into the bill? In particular, during Hurricane Ian, we saw many people that were delayed in rental assistance programs because their counties could not function in that way. Is there any contemplation to perhaps even a temporary diversion in evictions during the declaration when it's in place?
Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not at this time.
Follow-up, Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm going to shift gears a little bit to the DSO that's in the bill under the Department of Emergency Management, the foundation that's being created, starting at lines 279. Could you clarify what does knowledge of emergency management mean? I understand that majority of those 5 appointed members should have some sort of knowledge. Does that mean they work in disasters, they're contractors, they're professionals? Could you provide some clarity on that?
Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would go with your definition that you just laid out for us.
Members, questions? We're in questions. Representative Roach, you're recognized with a question.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Chairman, for this good bill. It's going to help my constituents down in Lee County. I've got my property appraiser, Matt Caldwell, and my tax collector, Noel Brandon, in the audience are going to take me to the woodshed if I don't ask you a little bit about local impact. But I see here in the revenue estimating conference, it's estimated about an $18.3 million negative impact in local governments. And I'm wondering if any of the allocations that we're doing from the general revenue funds to DEP or anything like that can be used to backfill that money for our local governments.
Representative mm-hmm. McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, if you look at the package, I think the impact to local governments is $18 million. And, you know, if you look at what we're going to provide to local governments is almost $500 million. So if you do some simple math and divide 18 by 67 counties, which I know this is not true because some counties certainly are impacted much more than others, but it's $270,000 per county. If you look at $500 million, that's almost $7.5 million per county. So I don't anticipate that that we would need to backfill at this point. The second thing is we have no idea. We don't really have an idea. This is a voluntary program somewhat, right, by the homeowner to file an application and do all those things. So I don't think we know what that number – we've estimated a number, but we don't know if that's the correct number or not.
Thank you.
Members, questions? Representative Hart, you're recognized with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the bill, when we talk about certain areas that may qualify for the grant funds, have we taken into consideration as to providing maybe a housing percentage, like a 200% of the federal poverty line? Because when we toss it out broadly, I know that low-income communities are going to get left behind. Have we considered it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that this is going to be fashioned somewhat. Some of this will be fashioned somewhat after a ship and sale that currently exists, which would, take into account for low-income residents and moderate residents, just like any other program that we would do for affordable housing.
Okay.
Representative Hart with a follow-up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Also, I'm wondering, will this bill, we talk about Ivan and
Nicole.
My question is, in the panhandle, Michael, that occurred in 18, has not been remedied yet in repairs and stuff for folk. Can they utilize any of these dollars up in the panhandle?
Representative McLean.
Generally not.
Members, we're in questions. Representative Valdez looks pretty excited there. We'll recognize you.
Flipping pencils. I'm sorry, it just flew out of my hands. It was good to see everyone, and thank you very much for
let the record reflect it did not hit any other members of
No, it did not. It's right here. It's very nicely sharpened. Thank you, staff. In reference to the partial tax refund of the $18.3 million, usually didn't the state paid for these fees or these refunds, if you will? Are we making local government pay for these partial tax refunds?
Representative McLean.
Under the current bill, they would be responsible to refund those. That's correct. And then again, I think if in a future when we come back in the spring or whatever, there's a pot. If we knew we've estimated what the number might be. I don't think we really have a good handle on what it's going to be, and I think we'll have a better idea when we come back as to what that number is, and then we could have that conversation then. Yes. Okay.
Follow-up?
Representative Valdez with a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. So I'm concerned about the smaller counties because, their revenue sources, not as much, if you will. And I'm also concerned, as a previous school board member, I'm really concerned about how this tax refund will impact the local school districts and other services that depend on this kind of funding, on this funding as well. What do you think that impact, do we know what the impact will be for these small counties or the counties that are affected and what that'll do to their school districts' budgets?
Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I have not seen a breakdown of county by county. Obviously, the number is $10 million to the school boards of the affected of the affected counties. Obviously, I think when you talk about the refund, it could be spread over 67 counties, where some parts of this bill are only directed at just several counties. So, again, we've estimated, but I don't think we have a good handle on what that number will be.
Thank you.
We're going to move forward with questions. Representative Mike Caruso, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative, I want to apologize first for not coming to you earlier today. I caught this one on second reading. So on page 19 of the bill, You reference financial assistance grants for different counties, one of which is Palm Beach County, which includes my district. Palm Beach County, we had tornadoes which destroyed about 18 different homes that are two-story complexes, kind of a condo-type situation. Under paragraph A1, you mentioned that it applies to parcels must be single-family, site-built residential properties. Would that include these condos?
Representative
Better Lane, two-story?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, we haven't had that question, so we're not sure if it was contemplated or not, but I'll be glad to certainly get that answer for you.
Thank you. No further.
Representative Campbell with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In looking in this bill and looking at the provisions within it, are there any things in this bill to make sure that the funds that are being allocated are not just being sapped to those who have million-dollar homes and ignoring, like, the low-income, middle-class houses?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe in the language there is language that speaks to low-income and moderate-income citizens being given priority.
Representative Campbell with a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But how, in looking in it, I did not see how it would ensure that majority of that money doesn't go to one particular amount of homes versus another. Is there somewhere in there that we can ensure that it's not being sapped out?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is not spelled out specifically. Again, I think if you go back and if you look at most affordable housing programs that are administered by the Florida Housing Finance Corporation, they would be based on low and moderate income families being given priority.
Representative Campbell with a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a way that we can add that language into the bill?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that current statutes would regulate any type of affordable housing or any, you know, the way that the dollars would be used would be distributed, I think, in a manner that we as a legislature have done over the last, you know, many decades as it relates to affordable housing.
Representative Campbell, one more.
Final question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Could you give me what statute that might be?
Representative McLean.
I'll have to follow up with you. I don't know the number, affordable housing statute off the top of my head.
Members, we're in questions. Up next, Representative Costello.
Thank you, Chair. Representative McLean, I'd like to say this is a good bill. This is going to help a lot of people, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. My question to you is, in there you have $60 million allocated to hurricane housing recovery. Is there any requirements that this money be spent on primary residents that are homesteaded, or are rentals included in this $60 million?
Representative McLean.
Thank you. As long as the rental property weren't considered to be a commercial property, I mean, in other words, commercial properties are excluded, but any residential, I believe the definition is, you know, any property that would be used either as a primary residence, or it could be a residential property that would be habitable for living, if you want to use that term, something that you would actually occupy. However, it does not differentiate between a rental home or property or a homesteaded property.
Representative Rayner, you are recognized with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McLean, I do appreciate the work that you've done on this bill. I wanted to ask you, does this bill contemplate future storms? And if so, if that is that language included in this bill?
Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. This bill is really an extension of some of the bills that we've already, some of the bills that we've already passed because of past storms, Michael, Irma, some of those storms. And I think really what this bill does is it's going to add to the way that we're able to, as a legislature, how we'll be able to respond to future storms.
Representative Rayner.
Specifically and succinctly, does this bill include language about future storms? Yes or no?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is focused particularly on Ian and Nicole, and then the DSO that we are authorizing, they would be able to bring language forward, for future storms and some of that kind of stuff.
Representative Rayner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Representative McLean, if we're thinking about future language, what is the plan in order to prepare for future storms? As we know that Florida, we don't get just hit with one storm every so often. We get hit with several storms in a year. So what's the plan as contemplated by this bill?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rayner, this bill is focused on Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. And again, I think there's some provisions in here that will give us more tools in our toolbox to respond rapidly to other storms as they, as they come to Florida. But this bill is focused on Hurricane Ian and Nicole.
Representative Rayner with one last question.
Really, one last question? Okay, so I'll make this
around after
this. I'll make this a good one. I have, and if you could come back, that would be amazing, Mr. Chair. Representative McLean, you mentioned earlier that the DSO would actually work on future storms and other things of that nature. The DSO, according to your bill, is set to expire July 1st, 2024. So is there a contemplation, if the DSO is going to work on this issue, that you would expand the length or time of the DSO to actually do meaningful and significant work?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, the DSO would be able to be reauthorized by this legislature, and I think I don't anticipate that being a problem in 2024.
Members, we're in questions. Representative Escamani with a question.
Thank you so much, Chair. I have a few more questions about the DSO. What is the difference between what we're creating in this bill and the current disaster fund that the First Lady has been, kind of seen as the chairwoman of? What's the difference between the two?
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is directly tied to the Division of Emergency Management. My understanding is that there are some statutory limitations on some of the things that Division of Emergency Management can accept or not accept as it relates to a donate. I'm sure they were inundated with calls from citizens saying, hey, how can I help? I want to donate, and I want to give this or whatever, and I think they were limited by that, and the DSO would certainly be able to accept more of those types of donations to work directly with DEM.
Representative Escamani with a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Will donors and spending of this DSO be readily available to the public?
I'm sorry, Representative. I missed the last part of that.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Will this DSO that is created in this bill, will those who donate to it and for this and the expenditures of it, will that be publicly available? For example, posted somewhere publicly, or can we request that data? Will that be publicly available?
Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it would have this DSO will follow all of those current statutes that regulate all the other DSOs that are in place in the state.
Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks for that clarity. What are the fraud prevention measures? Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of fraud with both PPP and EIDL, including members of the legislature, and former members, I should say. So what are we doing to prevent disaster funds from going to unethical and the wrong hands of people?
Right. Representative McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, again, the same rules that govern any DSOs that are currently operating would be in place. Audits would, it does require audits to be done on a regular basis. And so I believe that I believe that the right controls would be in place.
Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much. About three sessions ago, we actually eliminated a DSO, the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence, because there was unethical spending and salary boosts. So, why are we creating another DSO if there's a concern for that behavior? But I guess, B, what are the intentional metrics to prevent that from happening this time?
Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I think that certainly we can all agree that the DSO that was eliminated had gotten off the rails, and that's why we eliminated it. And we've put in we've put controls in place to ensure that. Obviously, during the last several storms that we've had, DEM has, we've come to a realization that DEM is not able to provide certain services or to receive certain donations or to receive help. I think there are some donors who would feel more comfortable. In other words, if they knew that the state were, if we had a support organization like this to help Division of Emergency Management in these, in times like this. And so, I think it's very appropriate for us to set up this DSO.
Representative Escamani, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to shift gears real quick to some of the questions that Rep. Campbell is asking, just for some more clarity, because the DEP program that's allocating dollars for relief, it does say in the statute that it has to prioritize low and moderate income folks. However, it also says that it operates on a first-come, first-served basis. So I guess I'm just looking for clarity. How are those two balanced? What does it mean to say first-come, first-served, but also serve low and moderate income families? What's the... That those two don't seem to click with me, so maybe some clarity would be helpful.
Representative McClain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that if applications are being presented to DEP, and one of them were to be for a low income or a moderate income based organization or project, obviously then that would be the one that was in a first come first served basis. That would be first come. Even if you had two applications come in on the same day, you're still going to have that would be the priority. So in other words, that would be the priority of that. How it works out, maybe in practicality, might be a little bit different, just because I particularly don't understand all the needs of Lee County or Charlotte County or any of the counties down there. Certainly, we have members on this committee and in the legislature who have a much better understanding of that. But I do think that language was specifically put in there to ensure that this money is not spent on higher income or whatever it might be. And so I think the language speaks for itself.
Members for questions. Representative Castle, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Cassell. That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's day one. We'll eventually get each other's names right. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all as an ex officio today. Turning to the affected communities, do we know whether or not any beach restoration projects were already ongoing in the affected communities that this bill addresses?
Representative McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I personally do not have that information.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, sir. Are we going to be doing more to ensure that the issue of beach erosion doesn't become a continuous cycle where we're filling the beaches with sand, we have these storms, we need to continue to do that same process?
Representative McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a great question, and it's something that I contemplated personally myself. I think we all want to ensure that when we spend the taxpayer dollar that maybe we do it once instead of having to do it over and over again. However, I don't have we did not contemplate. We did not contemplate that.
Is that something you would be willing to work on this issue in regular session?
Representative McLean. Not that, and this, that isn't really germane to this bill, by the way, but you may proceed if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think it's I do think it's a topic of conversation to be had for sure.
Personally. Members, questions?
Personally.
Questions? All right, seeing no more questions, we're going to move into amendments. Are there amendments? We do have amendments. Amendment 1, barcode 289351 by Representative Escamani. Representative Escamani, you are recognized to present the First Amendment.
Could you read the barcode for me one more time, Chair? I appreciate
it. Yes, it's 289351.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it was mentioned during the Q&A that unlike past hurricane disaster relief bills, this one does not include any protections for eviction or foreclosure. In my district and in districts around the county, hurricanes Nicole and Ian have been absolutely devastating. Massive damage, massive flooding. In District 42, if you saw photos, we had entire neighborhoods that were underwater. And that's in Central Florida, not in flood zones. And there's so much work to do when it comes to rebuilding. But there's also just the day-to-day economic impact. And with inflation the way that it is, alongside wages the way they are, especially in service-driven economies, many, many families were already struggling to make ends meet. But that becomes even worse in the case of a disaster. You have families who lose their source of income. You have families who lose a loved one and their source of income. You have folks who, you know, are unable to access their employer because of damage in the streets. There are other safety nets out there that kick in, but they take time, whether it's DUA or food stamps. They're not always readily available. And so eviction protection is something very near dear to my heart. Keeping people housed saves money for the government. It reduces homelessness, and it helps keep our kids safe and secure. And so I'm requesting with this amendment that during a declared state of emergency, in the case of Hurricane Ian and Nicole, with natural disasters being the reason why, that you have a pause on evictions, and then when that declaration is lifted, it will last for about 30 days. And this really just gives that renter and the landlord an opportunity to figure things out, to try to restore payment, and to potentially have to relocate with time to find a new location. There were some really heartbreaking images actually from Lee County in a trailer park community of renters where it actually lawmakers stepped in to help, but they were basically being evicted with no other place to go. So that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, we're in questions. Questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, are there amendments to the amendment? Is there public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, is there any debate on the amendment? Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I believe that while this might be a good statutory change, I don't believe it is the purview of the way, I don't really believe it's in the purview of the Ways and Means as a policy question. And at this point, I don't think it's something, I think it's something that could be addressed in regular session, but not in the current bill that we're considering.
Representative Cassell, I did see you hand up. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank my colleague, Rep. Escamani, for bringing this great amendment. Oftentimes, when we talk about hurricanes, we talk about the aftermath, but we don't talk about the preparation. And preparing for a Category 5 storm like Hurricane Ian costs a lot of money. And when you're on a fixed income or you're living paycheck to paycheck, the preparation to survive that storm is extremely expensive. You have to maybe find housing and leave or find a hotel for safety purposes, or you're preparing and buying batteries and food. So the costs that a lot of people incur to protect themselves to stay safe during a storm, already they're struggling and they're hurting. So now after a hurricane, when they are possibly dealing with an insurance company and having to pay not only their rent but also a motel, that money doesn't come in very quickly. So when we're talking about providing millions of dollars in disaster relief, We can't just only think about the big items that most of us think about. We've got to think about those people who struggle before the storm to stay safe, and then after the fact to find housing and food and lodging. So I do think this is a favorable amendment. I do think it is within the spirit of the bill when we're providing this type of relief, and I do think it should be voted up by the committee.
Members, we're in debate. Debate on the amendment. Seeing no further debate. All those in favor of adopting...
May I close, Chair?
Oh, Representative Escalante, you are welcome to close.
Thank you so much. I want to say thank you to Representative Cassell for the debate. I appreciate it, and I appreciate everyone's thoughtfulness as you reflect on this. And I just want to highlight a few other key points of why this is important to me, and why I also feel like it is relevant to the Ways and Means Tax Committee. This is the committee that is all about the money. It's all about how does money get to the state, what money do we take from our constituents, and how do they get it back? And at the end of the day, the cost of rent is money that people are putting out of their pocket into taxes, into fees, into a landlord. And so I think it is relevant for us to talk about eviction in this committee, and I also think it's relevant in the spirit of the bill, which is titled an act related to disaster relief, because this is a really important component to disaster relief. My colleague already mentioned just the cost of hurricane prep, and we do have families who fall behind on rent because they're prepping for that hurricane and they don't have enough money to make rent that month. We also know that evictions take law enforcement away from going after vandals or people who are breaking into businesses to remove a tenant in a disaster and to leave their stuff at a street corner in a disaster. You're basically creating a disaster on top of a disaster for that family. I would rather law enforcement be focused on prevention of actual crimes during a storm, not kicking people out of their homes based on the statute requirements of an eviction. I also want to note that our nonprofit community is working overtime when it comes to eviction relief. You know, federal dollars that came to Florida are pretty much dry at this point. And so it is less expensive to try to keep someone house longer and get them dollars to make ends meet with their rent versus have them face homelessness. We have no safety nets that can really address the crisis that we're in right now, let alone if another storm comes. And so for those reasons and more, I really want to encourage folks to consider a yes vote on this amendment, a yes, Gamani, if you will, because I do think that it's good for our constituents, it's good in the case of natural disasters, and it really does reflect what Florida has done in the past with hurricanes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that close. Members, we're going to move to take a vote on this amendment. All those in favor, say yay.
Yay!
All those opposed, nay.
Nay!
Show the amendment fails. We're going to move on to the next amendment. Amendment 2 is bar code 871917 by Representative Escalante. Representative Escalante, you are recognized to present your amendment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Hopefully this one will get some more yes votes. This one's shifting gears. I asked questions about the DSO, not necessarily because, you know, it's not something that we should consider, but because I do have some concerns about transparency. For those who don't know, we're basically creating a nonprofit C3 organization in statute. And that means that the donors are not public. That means that expenses are not always public. You know, if you look at a nonprofit's 90 paperwork, you know, a lot of times you might see the top handful of donors, but you don't see all the information. And if this is a statutorily created institution, I just think it's important that the foundation is required to comply with all financial disclosure, open meetings, and public records law in the state of Florida, just so we can make sure that there's no fraud, there's no prioritization towards a specific vendor. You know, for example, as we heard in my previous Q&A, contractors can serve on this board. I want to make sure that money is not going to that one contractor who serves on the board. It's just purely a transparency amendment. It does not change the intent of the DSO. It just makes sure that it is readily available and that we prevent fraud. That is the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, we're in questions. Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, are there amendments to the amendment? Seeing no amendments. Any debate? Debate on the amendment. Representative, public testimony. Is there public testimony? Seeing no public testimony. Members, we're going to move to debate. Debate. Representative Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're all a little rusty from being out for a little while. First off, Representative Escalante, thank you so much for this amendment. You know, I think that this is actually really a good amendment. We hear quite often that our governor says that this is the free state of Florida. And I think that, you know, in the spirit of freedom and transparency, we ought to be able to make sure that we know who is giving to this newly created C3 nonprofit organization, and making sure that people are not, granted favors or things of that nature, and just making sure that the folks are able to have that information, especially if we're using taxpayer money and money by the state in order to fund this, and people are also giving that money, and those monies may be commingled with public money. So I think that just in the spirit of freedom and transparency, that we should vote up on this amendment. It doesn't hurt anyone. It doesn't take away from the bill. I think it actually adds to the bill and probably would give folks and our constituents comfort that we are wanting to be transparent as possible as a legislature. So I encourage my colleagues, and especially my Republican colleagues, to vote up on this really good amendment.
Members, debate on the amendment. Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, it's my understanding that DSOs are required to comply with open meetings and public records laws. Currently, if the foundation has annual expenditures of more than $100,000, it has to provide an annual financial audit. Audits must be submitted within 9 months of the end of a fiscal year. The Auditor General actually could audit their books at any time that they see, you know, fit to do that, and so I don't believe that this amendment is necessary.
Members, debate on the amendment. Seeing no further debate, Representative Escamani, you're recognized to close.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks for that commentary. I just remember, you know, former Speaker of the House, Richard Corcoran, which is not something I say all the time, he was really big on going after DSOs, ensuring transparency with DSOs. And so I do see this as a bipartisan effort just to make sure that these records are accessible. That was not the case with past DSOs. And so that's purely the intent is transparency above all. So with that, I close. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that close. Members, we're going to proceed to take a roll. Vote. All in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed say nay.
Nay.
Show the amendment fails. Remember, we're going to move on to the next amendment. We'll now take up Amendment 3, Barcode 724459 by Representative Escamani.
All right, we're on a roll, but hopefully this one gets yes votes. Okay, Mr. Chair, so this goes back to the DSO. I asked earlier, you know, what defines someone who has knowledge in emergency management, and the chair agreed with my response. I don't actually like my response. I think that we need to make sure that those who serve in this capacity are not, again, you know, vendors who profit off disasters. I want to make sure that it's, you know, folks who have some certification, some background, understanding of how to respond to emergencies. And we are blessed in the state of Florida to have experts and professionals in emergency management. In fact, yesterday, many of us attended the fire service award reception where we recognized emergency responders and emergency managers. I'm a PhD student at UCF, and I have studied emergency management. So there are certifications, and basically what this amendment does is require that the majority of the members of those five must hold a certification as a Florida Emergency Management Volunteer, a Florida Associate Emergency Manager, or a Florida Professional Emergency Manager, and at least one member must be a member of local government, just because of the intersection with local governments and emergency management systems. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation, members. Let's move into questions. Questions on the amendment? Questions? Representative Duggan, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Rep. Do you know whether or not Representative Moskowitz had any of these certifications before he was made Director of Division of Emergency Management?
Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm actually not aware if he did, but a director appointment has a lot more transparency over. The public is much more aware of the role that he plays, can really hold him accountable to that. This is a appointed board, and not always in the access of the public, and they're making very intimate decisions with money that's donated. And so I do want to make sure that we're not going to put folks in place that don't have as much scrutiny as a statewide director would, who's in the eye of the press every single day. This definitely is a board that's being created that is not going to operate with that kind of transparency. And so that's why I do feel like, at the very least, the majority should have that representation. Doesn't mean everyone needs to. But I do feel like the majority should have that type of representation. So that would be 3 out of 5 members with 1 local government. And then the 5th person could, you know, be someone without necessarily any type of knowledge and could be that contractor, that vendor. And so it's not just one person. It does give room for diversity of perspective. But when you're managing this type of money, I do think we should give credence to those professionals and ensure that they have a say in this process.
Members, were in questions? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no further questions, are there amendments to the amendment? Seeing no amendments. Public testimony. Is there public testimony? Seeing no public testimony. Members, were in debate. Is there a debate on the amendment?
Chair.
Representative Duggan.
Thank you. Thank you. I just think it's a mistake to put into statute these mandatory requirements, as Director Moskowitz demonstrated. When you do that, you potentially eliminate folks who could be otherwise outstanding in these jobs, which I think universally he was perceived to have been. So for that reason, I'm going to be opposed.
Members, debate. Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, let's remember that the department, that the director of the Division of Emergency Management will be the appointee of these board members, and I would just, I'm going to think that that person would be very well qualified to know what types of qualifications those folks would need to serve on this board.
Debate, members. Seeing no further debate, Representative Escamani, you're recognized to close.
Thank you so much, Chair, and I appreciate the commentary. Again, just in the spirit of professionalism and transparency, I do feel like that any type of DSO that's going to be potentially managing private dollars in large quantities, that there's a level of experience that's reflective of that responsibility. And, this has nothing to do with the director of EMS. We're not requiring that the specific director carry certain credentials, but a volunteer board that's going to have a lot of authority and not as much transparency, I feel like would be a benefit to ensure that there's some professionalism that is integrated into it. And so with that, I encourage folks to consider a yes vote, and I do appreciate the feedback as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that close. Members, we're now going to take a vote. All in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, nay. Nay. Show the amendment fails. We'll move on now to the next amendment, Amendment 4, Barcode 981565. Representative Escamani, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you so much, Joe. This is my last one, members, and this one's very, very near and dear to my heart, so I hope you do consider giving it a look. So the My Safe Florida Home program had additional dollars added to it during the May special session for colleagues who were there for that. If you don't know, this is a program that essentially helps homeowners harden their homes. It gives them an incentive, financial support to do so, but not every Floridian is eligible for it. And really only those in high wind debris impact areas are, which you can kind of imagine as the bottom U of the great state of Florida. So what that means is Orange County residents, residents in Volusia County, residents in Duval, gotta say it that way, residents in the Panhandle don't qualify for this program. And with the amount of money we have in surplus and the amount of need we have out there for home hardening, not just in the reaction to a storm, but really also to help reduce property insurance rates, my request is that we expand the eligibility to the whole state, and then we also double the funding to meet that expansion. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, were in questions. Questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there amendments to the amendment? Seeing no amendments to the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, is there debate? Representative Rayner in debate.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Escamani, I think that this is a great amendment. And I don't know any member up here who wants to go back to their constituents and tell them that they chose not to help them when they had an opportunity to help them to make sure that their homes were hardened and protected. I most certainly will not be going back to the great county of Pinellas County and Hillsborough County and tell them I didn't vote up on this amendment. We're here to help our constituents. I think that this is well within the scope of the bill and under the purview of the bill. And I think that if we are here to actually help our constituents, everyone should be a yes on this amendment.
Members, we're in debate on the amendment. See no further. Representative McLean in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the My Safe Florida Home program received $150 million in funding. That program is just now getting up and running, and to date, it's only there's only been about $125,000 of that $150 million expended, so I think it'd be premature to put more dollars in there. But certainly it's something that could be revisited during session.
Members, debate. Seeing no further debate, Representative Escamani, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate the willingness to revisit it to Chair McLean, truly. Because it is something that in Orange County, you know, folks, many constituents have asked us about this program because they're hearing about it in the news, only to find that for most of our residents, they don't qualify purely based on where they live. And what we know to be true, especially in a peninsula like Florida, is that no one is really safe from hurricane impact. And I want to make sure that for especially those who are facing high premiums, you know, this is an opportunity not only to harden your home to reduce damage, but it can help reduce your rates, and it helps reduce your rate to file a claim, because ideally if a storm does come through, because you've hardened your home, you don't have to have you know, the damage sustained as you would otherwise. And so I really do encourage folks, especially if you call any of these other counties home that don't qualify, you know, think about your constituents in that moment, check in with them later if it doesn't pass. But I do think this is something that we need to consider, because again, not every part of the state is currently eligible, but every part of the state is impacted by these hurricanes and by storm damage. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that. Close, members. All in favor of the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Show the amendment fails. We're going to now move on to the next amendment, Amendment 5, which is barcode 794559. I'm going to just repeat myself. Amendment 5, barcode 794559, by Representative Joseph. Representative Daly will be presenting this amendment. Representative Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and honored to present this amendment on behalf of Representative Joseph, who had to step out. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to do so. You know, look, I like a lot of the provisions of this bill. I do have some heartburn over some of the local government funding portions, but I think we should, as a state, not necessarily do these type of bills on a piecemeal basis. And so this amendment would actually say and extend the coverage of this bill to all storms, past and future, because I think that's more forward thinking as a state, and it gives us the opportunity to utilize a lot of the same provisions in this program for a storm down the road without having to convene a special session, or, you know, heaven forbid it happens during session, we're able to just have it as the lay the groundwork for future storms now.
Thank you for that explanation, Rep. Daly. Members, we're in questions. Are there questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there amendment to the amendment? Seeing no amendments to the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Public testimony. Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, is there debate? Debate on the amendment. Representative McLean, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of Strike All would expand relief to all hurricanes, not just the current hurricanes Ian and Nicole that we're trying to address. You know, I think that some of the provisions certainly will carry over into other storms as they come along. But I do believe that, you know, what this package is trying to give direct relief to are the citizens who have been impacted by these two hurricanes.
Members, debate. debate on the amendment? Seeing no further debate, Representative Daly, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I said before, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present the bill, the amendment. I just think we need to be more forward-thinking and put out there a base level that we can operate on, and that's basically what this amendment does. And I would love if we could go in the opposite direction than we did on the other amendments and take a yes vote. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that close. Representative Daly, members, we're going to move forward with a vote. All in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay. Show the amendment fails. Let's move on to the next amendment. Amendment 6, barcode 232051. Representative Rayner, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. This amendment is very simple. It's very equitable. And it's similar to Representative Escamani's, except this bill deals with foreclosures from taking place when a state of emergency has been declared as a result of a natural disaster. The stay only is in place 30 days after the termination of the emergency declaration, so the court is able to, on its own motion, stay that. So I think it's very equitable and very self-explanatory. That is the amendment.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, we're in questions. Are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there amendment to the amendment? Seeing no amendment to the amendment, is there public testimony? Public testimony on the amendment. Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, debate. Members, debate. Representative Escamani in debate.
Thanks so much, Chair. I just want to say thank you to Rep. Rayner for the amendment. Y'all heard my concerns when it comes to eviction. All that applies also to foreclosure. And so I really do encourage folks to consider just the impact of a disaster on someone's economic security. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we're in debate. Debate on the amendment. Representative McLean, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this might be a good statutory change, but at this point, I don't think it's something I think it's something that probably could be addressed in a regular session.
Members, debate on the amendment. Seeing no further debate on the amendment, Representative Rayner, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I don't know why we would not accept this amendment pursuant to the footnote on page 65 on page 9. Prior post-hurricane relief packages also included foreclosure prevention and relief. So this is not unprecedented for the legislature to do that. I think that this is actually germane to this bill. And, we have families who, as has been explained and talked about, facing housing insecurity. And I think that if we're also going to have a bit of humanity when we are thinking about storms and what that looks like, I think the worst thing we can do during a hurricane or in the aftermath of a hurricane is to force folks out of their homes and have them be unhoused. And so because this is not unprecedented, I think that we should keep the precedent of having foreclosure relief and vote up on this very good amendment. Thank you.
Thank you for that close. Members, we'll move to take a vote. All in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Show the amendment fails. Members are now going to move on to Amendment 7, barcode 759723 by Representative Valdez. Representative Valdez, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. And this amendment would expand the availability of all programs in this bill to apply past hurricanes. And members, I just want to let you know that we still have Floridians impacted by past hurricanes such as Irma and Michael. So I'll give you an example. A constituent in my home district in West Tampa suffered damage to roof and a leaky roof and to their home during Hurricane Irma. The constituents that we're talking about is an elderly husband and wife with a disabled adult grandchild and another individual. They applied to the DEO to rebuild Florida in a timely manner, meeting all the qualifications, and was approved. Till this day, my constituent has yet to have their property fixed.
My staff has worked diligently with the department to try and get a resolve for this, and we're appreciative of how the department has worked. However, this is a great example of still how Floridians are being affected still today, and here we are doing relief for citizens of just recent storms, and yet we still have a backlash of before. So although my amendment is very similar to Representative Joseph's amendment and hearing the vote of no, I will withdraw my amendment because it's more or less in the same vein. But I wanted to tell you all this story about how some of our Floridians are still being affected and not being brought back whole in trying to fix their property. So I hope that maybe in next session that we can, during regular session, that we can really look at this a little bit more and help some of our constituents that have not been made whole from previous storms. The panhandle is still, you still drive there, you still see all these blue tarps everywhere. It's just not right. So I hope to be able to make it right next session then.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Valdez. And please let the record show the sponsor has withdrawn the amendment. Members, I believe that is the last of the amendments on this bill. So we're going to move forward with public testimony. Public testimony on the bill. Up first, we're going to have Travis Moore with the Community Association Institute. Mr. Moore, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to explain I had the same concerns that Representative Caruso had regarding condominiums on my first blush at the bill, but then reading in lines 477, it takes care of condos, and 479 takes care of cooperatives. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Up next in public testimony, we'll have Karen Murillo with AARP. Waves in support. Up next in public testimony, we have Pepperoncino with FSBA BPA. Mr. Uncino, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you for the bill. Pepper Uccino, president of Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association. We really do appreciate the $100 million that is going into the program under Chapter 161 for the hardest hit areas. It's incredibly important to recognize that these areas are going to need additional help to repair their beach and dune systems. So thank you so much. That is going to go a long way, including the potential for the DEP to waive some of the local match, because some of these areas, they really may not have some of the local match right now to put into it. And it's imperative that we get these beach projects underway. The only concern that we have is in Section 10, and I expressed this a little bit to Chair McLean yesterday, is that with a homeowner assistance program for these grants for sand placement and coastal armoring and whatnot, we are concerned that unless there's a comprehensive plan to do this, that some of this money may be going toward maybe ill-fated projects on a temporary basis that actually may not provide any protection. For armoring, where it's appropriate throughout the state, the best, most protective measure is to have a beach and dune system in front of that. Otherwise, the armoring can actually increase coastal erosion and increase coastal instability. So we want to make sure, and we've been talking with the department, that even with this $50 million grant program, that these projects are going to be fully planned out with with standards and whatnot that can then withstand the next storm. Otherwise, it's just going to fall back into the water. But we do have faith in the department's work with us in the interim since the bill came out, and we're moving forward on that. So really, thank you for the bill. I know these are hard hit areas. They're going to really benefit from what you're doing here. Appreciate all your work.
Thank you for that testimony. Up next, we have Trey Price with Florida Housing Finance Corp. Mr. Price, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, just wanted to address a few of the questions that have come up during the discussion of the bill. Though Chair McLean, I thought you did a great job explaining the bill and some of what we do. We appreciate the funds that are being put into the HHRP program. That's what we commonly refer to as Hurricane SHIP for those affected counties. And they're laid out in Chapter 420, Representative Campbell, where you can take a look at the SHIP program, which spells out the income set-asides. I believe you have to have, each county has to have 30% of them for very low income, which is defined as 30% or less. Then the low income is the next higher bracket, and it serves up to 140% area median income. And there's actually specific numbers that those local governments have to reach in all of those brackets. So I think we've got a good cross-section of very low income and working people that are covered under this. The value limit on the homes that can be worked on is generally set by the U.S. government, by the Treasury, and that's somewhere in the area of $300,000 to $350,000. So you're covered there, and again, they must be your homesteaded or your primary home for most of the SHIP programs strategies. Did also want to mention that in local governments, see, SHIP is a very flexible program. I did want to mention that in local government specific SHIP strategies, they can choose to have eviction and foreclosure prevention strategies in those, and then those would be covered under those specific strategies there. So you'll see some of the eviction and foreclosure help when these programs are funded. And I'm happy to take any further questions. I know we're running a little short on time, but I can also circle up with you and follow up with your offices. So thank you.
Representative Rayner with a question.
Not necessarily a question. Do you mind just coming by my office later to have, just would like to talk to you a little bit more?
Absolutely.
Thank you,
happy
sir.
To do that.
Thank you for that presentation, Mr.
Yep.
Price.
Thank you, sir.
Public testimony. Any further public testimony? Seeing no further public. Please, do we have a card? Okay, great. We're happy to get you. I think we need to get another card from you,
okay.
Though.
All right.
Well, please make sure you fill that out.
My name is Chris Doolin. I've been around a little while. I represent a lot of the smaller counties, but this is not a small county bill. This is an everybody bill, and I appreciate the questions that were raised by the representatives on the local tax roll. You know, you've all been involved in the emergency management response of hurricanes, and we know in Florida that we're going to get hit. I mean, my first experience with a hurricane was Hurricane Donna in 1960, and I remember where it blew water through the windows down in Miami. So the impacts are significant. They create devastation and despair in a comprehensive way. And this bill is a good bill. It is not, doesn't totally address everything. But one of the things that's reassuring is that we have a select committee on hurricane reform. That's going to be coming up. The issue that I saw was the impact on local government revenues. The rebate provision, the way it's set up, is fine. But it is being funded out of current year revenues that are budgeted at the beginning of a year by local government to provide the services that the TRIM notice and the taxes pay for. And under the bill, you've got to apply by April 1st, and then the tax collector renders a notice of the amount of money by September 1st. That's the beginning of the 12th month of a fiscal year. So I wanted to raise this issue because that is significant. That's a significant response if your business got hit with a... And so how much is this going to be? Well, we really don't know. I mean, EDR says $18 million. I talked to a county commissioner from Lee County yesterday. He says it's going to be $20 million just in his county alone. So it's appropriate to kind of slow down and get our head around this. And I'm really comforted by the fact that Representative Grant is going to chair the, and you as well. I mean, you do a great job. By the way, you're one of the best chairmen I've ever seen. You know, but Representative Grant is well aware and the impact on Lee and Charlotte, and I do appreciate the time. So when we have the time to look at it and understand, we're going to be seeing impacts at the local government level into 23, 24, and we'll adjust our budgets accordingly because of the tax roll going down. But we ask for help in the middle of this 2022 to help us with that revenue loss. Now, the match on FEMA is welcome. The beach renourishment is welcome. But those funds have a nexus to an issue or a problem. Those funds, and I don't want to be dismissive at all, but they're welcome, but they don't address the lost revenue of providing the services that our local governments have to provide. So I will defer. I thank you so much for the time and appreciate the affirmation of my issues or our issues. And I would hope that you would go back and talk to your local governments to see how they will accommodate the loss of revenue as it relates to their rebates. And if it's significant, then we'll work on that in the upcoming session.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Any further public testimony? I see Bob McGee with Florida Association of Counties. Did you fill out a card with us?
Yes, I did. I filled one out online also, but I'll be happy to fill out another.
Please get with staff and make sure that we get that done. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Bob McKee with the Florida Association of Counties. We represent locally elected county commissioners for all 67 counties. Today, I stand on their behalf to first thank Speaker Renner for calling this special session at the first opportunity to address this important issue. I also want to thank Governor DeSantis and the Executive Office of the Governor for the leadership that they provided throughout this storm and event. I want to thank the Division of Emergency Management Director, Kevin Guthrie, for all his dedication and especially for the boots on the ground throughout this event. I want to thank Chairman McClain for the bill today. That goes a long way towards helping these communities come back. And I want to thank the committee for this consideration. This is an important first step in meeting the needs of coming back from this storm, and we look forward to working with you in regular session to continue addressing this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any further public testimony? Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're moving to debate on the bill. Representative Hart, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for the bill. The bill does a lot for many people, and I'm grateful that you all, you know, I like Ways and Means because this is where all the money is, right? We get to see everything related to money. But I just want to say that as these services began to get rolled out and the Division of Emergency Management get these dollars, I heard the gentleman talk about SHIP. I'm a builder. I'm in housing, so I do know what the SHIP program does. But I also know that when people are writing their programs for their particular cities, that there are things that we can add in to help. And I think this poverty level should be somewhere about around 200, which would be the federal poverty level. Because at 80%, then there's 80 to 50, there's 120. He even went to 140. But I think when a storm takes place, you need it a little bit higher. So I'm hoping that the emergency management will have some latitude on raising that to 200% of the federal poverty level, especially for people who have homes that were built before 1960. A house built before 1960 not only does not meet any of the four-point inspection items, because before 1960, everything was so different, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, none of that, the roofs. People don't have what they need to get through the four-point inspection on those houses that are so old. So those houses are going to need just a little bit more money when we start to look at bringing them back and making sure that they pass that four-point inspection, or they will not be able to get insurance. So my hope is that they will have some latitude at our local levels in trying to determine exactly how to spend our SHIP dollars. I also hope that we have an educational rollout and have some PSAs that better help our constituents to understand exactly what this means. Most of the time, people who are going through devastation are last to even think about where to go to apply. But if we have PSAs running then people will understand that there's money available and then that they could go after those dollars. So my hope is that as this bill gets rolled out, I am going to support this piece, this bill. I'm happy to do so. I just hope that we educate our communities on the availability of these dollars when it comes available. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I'm just going to remind everyone we have about 15 minutes left in committee, and we want to move to take a vote 5 minutes till 2, so if everyone could please keep their debate as brief as possible. Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Daley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I just want to say thank you to Representative McLean and others who've worked on this. You know, look, I was too young to remember the devastation from Hurricane Andrew. But a couple days after Ian, I drove over to the West Coast, and I've never seen devastation like that. Entire homes just gone, entire buildings just gone. Fort Myers Beach was some of the worst I'd ever seen, and so, and I know Representative Roach, Representative Botana, so many others have been so significantly impacted by that storm, and so anything that we can do is certainly a positive. I know that we have this new committee that's going to address, you know, hurricane preparedness and response as well. But this is certainly a step in the right direction, and I am proud to support it, even with the heartburn I have over the local government funding issue. But hopefully, we can continue to work on that as well.
Members, debate. Representative Cassell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for indulging me and allowing me to be here today. I won't be following on the Ways and Means Committee in the future. I'm an attorney that has the honor and privilege of representing people after catastrophic losses, after hurricanes. I am there long after the cameras are gone, long after the nonprofits have left, and they're still left struggling. So I want to applaud you for this work and making sure that people of Florida get the relief that they need. And while it is not a perfect product, it gets people relief, and it gets them relief now. So I look forward to working with you, Chair, on the Hurricane Resiliency Committee and to further identify the issues that we've raised today in some of these amendments to make sure people are taken care of that maybe this bill doesn't necessarily look to protect right now. Thank you.
Members, debate. Representative Escamani, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you so much, Chair. I first just want to say that I have a goal of this session of getting at least one amendment passed out of this committee. So hopefully folks entertain that alongside a workshop on combined reporting, but we'll talk about that later. But to the bill, overall, Chair McLean, I think that you are carrying a very important package with incredibly essential relief dollars going to our communities. We outlined in Q&A and some amendments just some areas of improvement, and in particular, ensuring that low and moderate income families receive funding first, that they are promoted towards these programs, they know about them, and let's really truly make sure that there's mechanisms in place to prioritize that. And I appreciate folks coming to speak to beach erosion, same type of concern. Let's make sure it's being spent in an effective way. Transparency and meritocracy with the DSO to make sure those in those positions are prepared and qualified to be there, ensuring that we are reimbursing local governments when it comes to the tax relief component for consumers, just because we know this impacts not just county coffers, but also school board coffers. So be sensitive to that. And then finally, just eviction and foreclosure support. Those are some of the areas that I feel like if the bill, as it moves through this very short special session, would make a good bill even stronger. And with that, I do encourage members to vote on the bill, vote affirmative, because I think it is important. But I just want to share some of those areas of improvement that I think will make sure the impact is felt by all. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Campbell on debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to Representative McLean for bringing this bill to our attention and really pushing this bill very, very, very strong. I just want to say thank you for also indulging me in my questioning. I definitely did have concerns about that. I want to thank that gentleman that came forward to provide some information that I wasn't privy to before. And so definitely it's always a concern when we do things like this that we're just not giving it to the people who don't need it. and we're ensuring that the funds are going to the people that actually do need it. And so I definitely look forward to seeing those numbers afterwards, and I just want to say thank you once again, and I will be voting up on this bill.
Members, debate. Seeing no further debate, Representative McClain, we have about 8 minutes left in committee for you to close and us to move to vote. So you are recognized to close, Representative McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a 30-minute close plan, but I guess I'll cut it down. Members, this is a $751.5 million relief package. And this is a lot of it is immediate relief that will be available to the citizens that have been impacted by Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. I think it contemplated immediate needs for our citizens. It also, we're also helping our local governments with some of the things that we think that they'll need, for tools in their toolbox. And certainly, I appreciate all the questions. I appreciate the concerns about some of the longer-term issues that we need to discuss. But I do think that there will be time for those. I think we're setting, we continue to set Florida on a good pace that when we do have natural disasters, we have the tools necessary for the legislature and, the governor's office to be able to move quickly and to be able to offer the greatest relief in the way that the citizen needs it, not in the ways that the legislature thinks it needs to be done. So I'm appreciative to all of you. It's a good bill, and I would ask for your favorable support.
Thank you for that close, Representative McClain. Seeing Representative McClain is closed, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip LaMarca? Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Raina Goolsbee?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Tant? Valdez?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
22 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, please show the bill is reported favorably. And with that, I'm going to return the gavel back to our chair, Chair McClain.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Buchanan, for running the meeting smoothly and certainly allowing all our members to have an opportunity to ask questions. Members, our next meeting has not been scheduled as of yet, but most likely we'll be meeting in January when we come back. This concludes our committee agenda for today. Representative Escamani moves, we rise without objection. Show the meeting adjourned.